resume. Next up is...
That's fine.
Which one?
The London.
Edmonton Economic Development Corporation Infrastructure. So you guys can come on up to the seat here. We closed the dome because there's a bit of a draft on a windy day such as this. And for once, it's not coming from this side of the table. That's a hot wind. The one coming off there is a cold wind.
A gentle breeze.
The Rosen Clipper. The cold draft coming from this way.
Please don't share that with my husband.
All right, so
it's probably already being tweeted. So,
so there's only one profile in here, and yet we'll probably generate some questions. So, Councillor Henderson is not here; he's on the board. Is there anybody else who has questions on the Shaw Conference Center renewal? Nope, there's no presentation. There's just questions. Anyone want to ask questions? Councillor Essinger, if you'll take the chair.
We'll have the chair.
Page 439. You might want to click on me and start my time. Otherwise, we could be here all afternoon. Actually, no, I would quickly exhaust questions on this. So this comes out of your RIMS modeling, your risk-based infrastructure modeling system that says that this 30-some-year-old building needs X amount of work, just like any other city asset. Yes? Or is this independently set up by, are you guys on the grid or off the grid?
Mr. Mayor? Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
They're part of our asset, so they are part of that RIMS allocation.
So it's RIMS saying, as one of the family of city buildings, $7.9 million is what is needed to keep the Shaw Conference Center plugging along.
Elements, atrium glass unit replacements, mechanical, electrical system upgrades.
And the escalators, which we funded in the previous budget, that's carried over?
That's carried over. We've got a contractor. We're negotiating with them right now. Timing on the construction is, bear with me.
What?
Timing of the construction is, bear with me.
Just bear with me. Sorry.
Symbolic.
You had to figure out how to get them in and out of the building, I understand, because they're pretty big escalators, and you got to cut a bit of a hole in them to sneak them in, right? Mr. Higuchi?
Perhaps
this
I can
has been
assist
your nightmare,
this?
Hasn't it?
Yes. It's my understanding that the contract is being worked up right now. The paperwork should be done by about the end of the year. We expect the contractor to start the production process. And construction in the convention center will start most likely around June or July of 2015.
Okay, and how long will it last?
We would anticipate the construction lasting at least 18 months, perhaps 20 months.
So we're all going to get some exercise during that time?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Mayor, the plan is to actually keep a bank open.
And they'll be down on the way in, up on the way out?
And logistics to be worked out based on the events.
Sure. Well, that's kind of how it works most of the time anyway these days. So so your excuse is they're 30 years old. Just don't buy from whoever we bought from. Certain other sets of escalators that I won't go into any further detail on. So, I think this is kind of a no-brainer that we need to continue to invest to keep this building current. So, is there anything else coming up here? Does this cover the emergent needs from your point of view, Mr. Higuchi?
Yes, it does cover our emergent needs.
And then there is an operating budget profile that is for maintenance, but it is separate than this because it's an administration clarified in the written questions that those are things that would not be eligible for capital funding.
That is correct.
Because it's the day-to-day churn.
Those are tenant leasehold improvements that we have in the operating budget.
Okay. Okay, I will take back the chair. And Councillor Henderson, did you have questions for EDC? No? Well, that was pretty easy then. You're on the board. You're on the board, sir.
Okay, good enough. Get off.
All right.
Don't interrupt.
My time's still going. Maybe I'll make a motion while we're at it here. Not on EEDC, but on the previous item. So if you can take back, if you can keep the chair, Councillor Essinger.
Take the chair back.
I will move that, seconded by Councillor McKean, that the capital profile name, Milner Library, number 1220-0055, change by 35 million, with tax supported debt, releasing 35 million to pay as you go. And then I will do a subsequent motion to think about whether that might fit with CRL, but for the time being, we'll leave it as tax supported debt for 35 million out of Milner. Yeah, funding source shift, but that creates some flexibility.
From pay as you go to debt?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, there's 42 million of pay-as-you-go in Milner, so this would free up 35 million of that to fund all the different things that you all want to build. You're welcome. So that's moved, and seconded by Councillor McKean. Thank you. I'll take back the chair. And joining us from Esther Starkman School in Ward 9, Francis Steeds, or Stead. Stead? Steed. Stead. Grade 6 class as a from the aforementioned Esther Starkman School. Welcome to City Hall. Your counselor is Councillor Brian Anderson, who is absent presently.
Temporary.
From over there. He will return. But he will be disappointed that he missed seeing you. So welcome to City Hall. We're talking about our city's infrastructure budget. So that's it for EEDC. Next up is the Francis Winspear Center for Music. Delegation. You folks can come on down to the presentation zone. For the questioning zone. We'll let you get settled here and then we have a speaker's queue starting up, or questioner's queue. Yeah, there is a profile for it. It's on page 84. And community services is here to answer your questions as well, because it's actually attached to community services. Councillor McKean.
Thank you.
Well, actually, they do, strictly speaking, we did approve the opportunity for them to make presentations. So police gave presentation, there was presentation from library, there was no presentation from EDC, but there is a presentation.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, we do have a presentation.
Well, please go ahead with that. Thank you.
Thank
Apologies.
You. Thank you very much for inviting us to speak here today about the Winspear Completion Project. I have been a volunteer with the Edmonton Symphony Orchestra and the Winspear for over 10 years. I believe in the power of music and in the impact of our organization on the community. And we are here today to ask you for your support for our capital project to complete the original vision of the Winspear Center for Music. We are looking for $13 million over 4 years.
Great.
20 years ago, on the site of the old police station, as many of you will recall, construction began on what is today the Francis Winspear Center for Music, and I have the pleasure of being the executive director of that organization. It was one of the most transforming events that helped re-energize our downtown and instilled tremendous pride in our city because so many people had a hand in building it. It set a standard for concert halls across our country. And look what this magnificent facility has become for the people of Edmonton today. We estimate that 250,000 people walk through the Winspear in a year, whether for concerts, family celebrations, yoga over lunch, schools, etc. To keep the original project within budget, we scaled back the plans and ended up with a parcel of surplus land. We had to make a commitment to the city that we would develop it within 5 years, according to the terms of our lease. Thank you for the 3 lease extensions. In 2011, on the last renewal, you asked us what our plans were, which brings us to today. When we built the Francis Winspear Center, we meant for people of every walk of life to gather here to celebrate and to experience the magic of music. But we haven't yet fulfilled what it means to be a true center for music. We haven't opened our arms wide enough to the people of our changing city. We haven't given Edmontonians the chance to experience music at its fullest. With your help today, we could fix that. And we will fix that. That's my promise. And we're going to do it in a very Edmonton way. We know as Edmontonians that we have an adventurous spirit. Together we are changing the story about Edmonton and supporting the city's initiatives that showcase our vibrancy, our resilience, and our creativity. Let's continue to show the world that this beautiful winter city, as we've seen today, is an exciting place to live and to raise our families. With the completion of the Winspear, we expect to more than double our reach to over 500,000 people. This project transforms the Winspear and with it, our downtown. The building will be open to the public all day long, and we will reimagine how we engage with people. There'll be no closed doors, no barriers to access. Think of the Stanley Milner Library, just across the square from us. It's a perfect example. We'll be able to deliver through the Tommy Banks Place for musical creativity and touch lives that we cannot touch today. We know that people are drawn to where people are. Think about the places that you all like to go. This project will enhance the Arts District with a pedestrian plaza, a discovery center, classrooms and studios, a daycare operated by the YMCA, and a versatile, acoustically superb performance hall of about 500 seats. It's going to be called the Music Box. Every space will be multi-purpose. The hall will go from a flat floor to raked seating, much like you see here, with the push of a button, making it as affordable as possible for all users. The more that happens, the more that will happen. It's an economic driver. More people will be drawn to live in a vibrant downtown. I think we all know that. The Winspear completion will connect downtown to the quarters and will get people moving, indoors and out, with access to the LRT and pedway, protected bicycle storage, and safe and secure parking. The best things in Edmonton, the truest things, are built from the ground up. And that's how we built the Winspear in the 90s, and that's the spirit of this project, too. It will serve as a perfect complement to all of the activity that energizes our downtown today, whether Churchill Square, City Hall, the Farmers Market, the Library, and our sister arts organizations, as well as the future Arena District and Royal Alberta Museum. It's not news that Edmonton is growing and growing fast. The Winspear needs to evolve too. The children of today are our citizens of tomorrow. We need to give them every tool to be ready for the future, and creativity is one of those. We want to continue to serve the community and be sustainable many more decades from now. Think back a few months ago when 45,000 people gathered for Symphony in the City right here in the heart of downtown on Labor Day weekend. I'm not sure this would have happened 20 years ago. It was music and community that drew us together. This is what music does. This is why we want to keep our promise to the City of Edmonton and complete the Winspear to make it a true center for music.
The total project cost is $53 million, which will be shared between municipal, federal, and provincial orders of government and the community. Essentially, it would be a 25-cent dollar investment for each stakeholder. The Winspear has a record of sound financial management and planning ahead for large capital expenditures. The organization has an endowment to draw upon and is prepared for large outlays of cash, such as with the roof replacement fund and a comprehensive capital plan. The request to the City of Edmonton is for $13 million and it can be spread over 4 years. The next phase of the project is to complete design at a cost of $3.75 million. We are asking the City Council today to advance $3.75 million of the $13 million in 2015 in order to allow us to complete the design process so that it can continue uninterruptedly while we secure the remaining three quarters of the funding. The other aspect we want to bring up briefly is the proposed parkade. This parkade is not part of the Windspear completion project and will be separately and commercially financed. The project will create a place that enhances downtown with more activity and more public access to the arts. The city has already invested $1.75 million in the project to date. Thank you for your support over the past several years. To keep this project moving forward, we are asking for an advance of $3.75 million to work through the design phase of the project while securing funding from the community and other orders of government. Our city is evolving. Every aspect of the Windspear completion project aligns closely with Edmonton's strategies for innovation, accessibility, and the quality of life. By completing the Windspear Center, you will fulfill the community's original vision for a true center of music where all will feel welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for the presentation. Councillor McKean.
Thank you. I just want to start off with a few questions. Thank you for the presentation today. I heard some things from you that I didn't know. So you talked, Ms. Pestroff, about sort of fulfilling an obligation to the city, at least implied, in regards to completing the project. Can you just clear that up for me? I didn't know about that there was some original plan that was this size.
There was, and at the time, in order to keep within the, well, it was a $34 million project when the Windspear was built, but in order to contain that, keep that cost contained, we have to downsize the original plans of the Windspear, and that left that small parcel of land that faces 97th Street, which is the parcel that we're talking about.
And City Council the day had asked the Windspear to come back with plans.
Would have been through the mayor's office at the time, but yes, and city administration, yeah.
Okay. Tell me, how much of an operating subsidy do you get from the city every year?
Through the Edmonton Arts Council? Well, in total, for the Windspear and the Edmonton Symphony Orchestra, so it's combined, which I'm sure you're aware of, that was a change that was made about a year and a half ago. We now get a Cornerstone Arts Grant, and it's approximately $1 million in operating funding per year. But the majority of that is earmarked for the Edmonton Symphony Orchestra.
Right. Do you know how much actually goes to the Windspear itself?
It's about, it's less than a third. It's less than $300,000.
Okay. The 97th Street side of this project, so you talked about a daycare. Is there other opportunities for enlivening the street there? Will you be doing other things? You got a parkade, you got a daycare center. What else might there be there? Or is there room for other retail?
Yes, the child care, of course, will be in the completion side, and then we have reserved about 2,200 or 2,400 square feet of retail space on the main floor of the parkade.
You were asking for $3.7 million out of this capital cycle, or you talked about the $3.75 million. That's for to complete the design work?
We are asking for $13 million in the current cycle. However, we realize the reality is that that may not be available, so we are asking you for $3.75 as an advance on that request so we can continue design and at the same time put other funding in place.
Have you approached the province about splitting the cost of the design?
No, we have not.
Okay.
We have had meetings with the Chief of Staff in the Premier's office and the Minister of Culture, but that subject was not approached.
Okay. Well, I'll leave that for now. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councillor Essinger?
I'll just start there. You need the $13 million commitment in order to go to the other levels of government. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, good.
Yes, we would like a commitment from the City of Edmonton so we can move forward with other levels of government. However, the $3.75 million would be a significant signal, in our opinion, because at that point the City of Edmonton would have a significant investment in this project.
My question was because this is the four-year capital budget, so in the next 4 years you anticipate $13 million because we only give 3.75 in this cycle. Would you be able to continue, or would that keep you on the journey?
No, it would keep us on the journey, in your words, and we would probably come back to you for the balance next year through other envelopes.
Okay, I'm interested in your comments. You talked about this would now double your reach and you would be open to the public all day long. Could you help me understand that?
You bet. Today, our building is open when we have performances, and occasionally we're open when we're able to give tours of the facility when they're organized in advance. But we're not really set up. There's no facility at the front of the building to be able to welcome public during the daytime. The idea behind the completion is that it's much more user-friendly, that it has daytime activity, hence the classrooms, the Discovery Center, the daycare. As well, what we would like to do is we'd shift our box office functions to the completion portion so that people could actually interact more when they're interested in participating in something that's offered at the Windsphere. More like an information center as much as a box office, which is more transactional in nature.
Okay, so if I was wanting to go for my lunch hour, I could go and hear what was happening in the building. Is that the kind of thing you're thinking of?
You're absolutely right. And for example, the concept is that there would be a sunken area with steps where it would just naturally lead to having impromptu performances. If there's workshops or performances by school groups, they could actually perform there, and it wouldn't be a fixed performance. It would be something that might happen over the lunch hour, for example.
Okay. The other thing is you're looking to have a space for a daycare. Are you looking this to be a drop-in daycare so people could attend your events and your classes, or is it a daycare for workers in the area?
It's a daycare for workers in the area, and it's full-time daycare.
Okay. And the parkade, it's part of the plan, but it's privately funded. Is that what I understood?
The parkade is designed to replace the revenues that the Windsphere currently derives from the surface lot, and we feel it that it's best financed through private financing or commercial paper. We're not sure that we want to approach our donors and funders for money to build a parking garage.
I would agree. I was just wanting to clarify that, so thank you very much. That's all my questions right now.
Next up is Councillor Caterina.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. Just a couple of clarifications. 3.75 advance now going against the 13. That's the total you're asking, or over the.
That is correct. We would, of course, like a commitment for the full 13.
Certainly. But I guess my question is, and I have to ask it, getting the 13 will show the city's commitment. What if that's not enough to get the other three-quarters on side? Then what happens to the 13? What does that buy you?
Well, first of all, we would not move forward with construction until we have funding in place. So the Windsphere is very low profile in terms of risk.
Okay. The design part of it, is that a risk? Because you're going to do that work regardless of whether you build or not.
We feel very confident that the province and the federal government will be on side. We have also done a feasibility study on the fundraising that we need to do, and the $14 million we are anticipating raising is doable, according to the study.
Okay. The daycare center, you're the second group that's introduced a daycare center. So give me a little more specifics of it. Who's it for? Who can access it? Is it staff? Is it public? How is it going to be run in the building?
Sure. The YMCA would operate the daycare, and they've already made a commitment to that. And so it would be run like pretty much any other YMCA daycare, open to everybody. I know that my own children were in a YMCA daycare. I know that it was partially subsidized, so I think it will be very affordable. And it will have 82 spots, is it? 60 spots.
Is it a revenue generator? Are you counting on it as a revenue generator for yourselves?
It would be primarily break even, but maybe a small amount. Yeah, there'll be some rent payable.
Okay. So tell me why that's important then, if you're not looking to make any money on it or even possibly a small subsidy to it. Why the daycare in there?
You know,
I'm not saying that I don't agree.
No, it's a good question, and I think it's a simple answer. I would venture to say that everything we do with the Windsor is really there to benefit the community and to benefit society, and I see this as being one aspect of that. Okay. You know, it's from cradle, I was going to say cradle to grave, but from cradle to you know.
To longevity.
To longevity, thank you.
Not grave.
No, not grave.
Okay. How about the garage, the parking structure? That is anticipated to be a revenue generator?
Yes, most definitely, and I'll let Stephen take that question.
Yes, sir, it is. Our business case shows that it will replace the current revenues that we are getting from the surface parking lot. And as its usage grows and as parking rates grows, it will become quite profitable.
Okay, so it's an important part of your business case. So.
Absolutely. It's both projects have to move forward in tandem.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Councillor Henderson?
Well, just to be clear before we get too caught up in the ancillary stuff, I mean, the ancillary stuff is the ancillary stuff. I mean, if I'm hearing you correctly, the major need is a long-standing need, one which was to pick up another rehearsal, smaller performance space, which is part of the original plan, correct?
Correct.
And also the kind of classroom space that allows for people to participate beyond just sitting in the seats and watching.
It's really about being able to participate in music, yes.
And that's about the larger picture of how the whole music scene's
concept evolved
around the symphony and all of that, and how we can get full value out of that, right?
Absolutely, because we know statistically that people who participate in music will also be more active consumers of music, and I use consumers usually, but you know what I mean. It's just good for people.
And I'm guessing that with the suggested movement of the music department from the university coming downtown too, that there's synergies with that as well.
That's another further compliment. Absolutely.
Yeah. So the other pieces of this puzzle are the add-ons above the real, that's the real desire, that's the real need that you're trying to deal with. Yes.
You're right.
To speak about the add-ons though, it does strike me that you're in it's an interesting building because it would allow you to basically take the building that now faces towards downtown and actually also allow it to face towards the quarters, yeah?
Right.
So you're in an interesting position. You're actually in the downtown CRL, but this probably would have huge benefit to the quarter CRL because it would give an active face and not a back door.
Yes.
Along that edge, and Chinatown as well is part of what we're struggling in there as well.
I was about to say that's another part that we will be fully engaged with the Chinese community as well.
Okay, so I'm just interested looking at the profile around the timing piece because this profile would suggest you'd be done by 2018, but that's not what we're talking about here really. The timing of this isn't where we're at this point, right?
Under.
You'd have to have it wouldn't just be us that came up with their money. Right. You'd have to have the other pieces of the money.
All things being equal, we could optimistically start in 2016 and finish in 2019. My anticipation is that it won't be 2016.
But you need other money.
We need other funding.
It's not just us that becomes the question mark in that. But as with a whole bunch of other projects, we've already actually put a fair chunk into this one. You need the next piece to make sure it doesn't stall, that we keep on going, and at the same time you'll be going out and hustling the other money.
Right. So and at the risk of answering a question you didn't ask, the $3.75 million in design will allow us to move forward with design so that when the other funding falls in place, we can start construction. If you commit today to just the $13 million, and I don't mean today just the 13,
but
if
you
commit to the 13,
anyway, right?
We don't need the $13 million today, but if you were to commit to the 13, we still wouldn't spend the $3.75 million on design until we have other funders in place.
Yeah, and so, I mean, this is the bind that we're always in, right? You know, because we're doing a four-year budget rather than a six-year budget or a 10-year budget. You need us to continue to move this project forward, otherwise it stalls. But you actually probably don't need a big chunk of this money until way later in the process.
That is correct.
So we need to figure out how to say we're on board or not on board, get you the money to keep on moving forward, so that actually we can be looking at this and finishing it off probably in the next capital round is my guess.
Possibly. We'd like to do it in this capital round.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Okay, thanks.
Councillor Oshry.
Just following up on the money, can you explain again to me how this is going to work? So if we gave you, it was a 3.75, then you go to the other levels of government and say, is it matching, potentially? You don't really know, right? Or say, here's a starting commitment from the city, what are you going to give us?
So you're asking if the 3.75 is what we're looking for matching on? Or we're looking for matching, we're looking for a quarter, like from all three levels of government and then the public.
But we don't have any assurance that they're going to, the other levels of government are, I mean, I know you said we don't have any assurances, though. You've indicated that they are interested. So,
yes.
Well, my question is if we give you some piece of money now,
yes.
There's some risk that they might not be interested, correct?
I think it significantly increases the chances that they would be interested.
Okay, and would it matter if we gave you a piece or the full 13 for them in order to gain their interest?
Yeah, I mean, it obviously the full 13 is the ideal. So I can't answer the question on the 3.75. I don't know, it'd be hypothetical at this point.
The commercial space at the back facing 97th Street, is the revenue from that part of your business model for how you're going to operate the?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so what about the risk of that commercial space not being rented? I mean, we've got there's not very good commercial, but there is some commercial in 97 that doesn't do very well. So why do we think this is going to do well when the rest of it doesn't in other locations?
I mean, the commercial would be tied specifically to the type of activity that would be appealing to people who are parking there during the day. So it might be dry cleaners, florists, those kinds of things. We're not believing that a restaurant would do well in that section of town at this time, for example.
I mean, there's commercial space all over downtown where there could be dry cleaners and florists. So I'm just,
well,
I mean, you're going to be competing with every other commercial. There's nothing that's going to draw people to that, to your commercial space versus any other commercial space.
Well, so
can you explain what, you know, you're going to be competing with everyone else, so I'm trying to
wrap
my head around that you might not be able to rent it.
So just being as someone who lives downtown and works as yourself, who works at the Wind Sphere, I have a pretty good sense of the type of things that aren't in the neighborhood right now that I wish were, and those are one of those things. In order for me to get to a dry cleaner, I have to, actually the only one I can go to right now is either Page or I gotta drive down to Press Gallery, and neither one of which are really that convenient. If you're parking there at the Parkade, I think there are some businesses that lend themselves really well to that kind of a location.
What percentage of the revenue would that be?
The Parkade is budgeted to generate approximately $2.7 million in the first year, and the commercial space at 2,400 feet at $25 a year is a relatively small component.
Okay.
It's not a major risk. And we were originally thinking about 6,200 feet, and now with the childcare taking up 4,000, we've reduced the risk of not renting significantly because the childcare will have a permanent revenue flow.
And, you know, and just to add on to that, the amount of activity that the childcare brings with people coming and going, as well as all the classes and all the day and evening activity, that in itself will also generate a certain amount of need for other services.
Can you have you had conversations with the Galleria people?
Always.
So the programming and this 500-600 seat performance hall that you're looking at, can you talk a little bit about how the Galleria fits into that? The particular so potential gallery?
We've had a number of discussions with the gallery proponents right from the day they started their project. The gallery project as it currently stands, and I have to admit I don't have actual facts about where it currently stands other than what I've heard from the proponents, is that they are going to focus on a small performance hall, 500 to 600 seats, primarily focused on university education. So the strength of their business case, Councillor, is that they're planning to rent the space or let the space be used by university music students 50% of the time during term. If you extrapolate that, that means 80% during the university term. 80% of the time it will not be available for rentals. We have in our business case identified 15 or 20 music performance groups that are currently performing all over the city in churches and in other small halls. And each one of these halls has been identified as having some type of deficiency. It's not close to LRT. There's no parking. You can't get a piano into the building. It has no box office. We would like to become the home for all these organizations. And the rental projections that we have and the letters of support we have indicate that it will become so.
And if I might just add to that, given that it's a multi-purpose space and actually is not just a purely performance venue because of the retractable seating, it will have a wood floor. It actually also satisfies a shortage of convention space in the community, in the downtown area. And it complements all the other spaces within the facility in that way as well for corporate use.
And if I may add one more point, sorry. Our performance hall will be an acoustic concert hall as opposed to the Galleria, and I don't want to get into too many subtleties, as opposed to the Galleria proposal, which will be a theater.
Councillor Sohi.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So the total project cost is $52 million, right? And
53, I'm sorry.
It says 52, and okay, 53.
Okay.
And you're asking for 13 for the city's contribution, which is 25% of the total project cost. And up front, you're asking for 3.75 for the design. And you want to leverage that 3.75 for community donations from other orders of government. So we are getting a value for the $3, I mean, the total is 25 cents on part of the city, but you leverage that to get a dollar invested, right? I just want to know the risk. You say getting money from other orders of government, the risk is there, but not as much. But what is the risk of, what is the shelf life of the design? If nothing happens, I just want to understand, what is the risk there?
That is a very good question. If you allow me, I'll just consult for a moment.
Okay.
Should have thought of that myself. It's good for any period of time. Of course, there's escalation that we're going to run into.
So that money being invested into the design is not lost money. It's money that you leverage in order to get that investment done in the project.
Yes, sir.
Right. Okay. Ms. Rosen, on the we talked about this ERL related to the library. That's not all new growth. It's more, you know, rehab and reskinning and some upgrades, but this would fall under growth, right?
Yes.
Right. So I know we can't dump everything into CRL, but looking at the kind of growth that is happening in the downtown and many other projects in this profile that are related to CRL, how does this fit into that? And from a risk point of view, because last thing I want to do is put this into CRL and not be funded in a short time for the design at least, and then risk the leveraging of that money.
So I'm going to answer that in two parts, Councillor Sohi. In terms of how does it fit into the CRL, I actually think that this fits in quite well. In having discussions about potential projects for the CRL, one of the things that you actually did talk about was, with respect to the Civic Precinct, having better activation on the 97th Street side. And so this would help from a Civic Precinct discussion perspective in achieving that goal. So I actually think that it could fit into the, from a project perspective. I think that the big question, though, is about timing. Because, as you know, we have projects that are in this budget for the CRL, and they've been put in there on the basis of where we think the cash flow is going to come. If you actually add more than to be accomplished in this four-year period of time, it just means it's going to be a little bit longer period of time before our cash flows become positive as opposed to...
Might have to adjust
yes.
according to it, but if province agrees to include this and the Milner into the CRL projects, I think it's a win-win from our perspective.
Well, I don't think anybody's debating what could potentially go into the CRL, but at some point there's a finite amount of,
yes, of course,
dollars in the CRL, and there's a timeline in which those dollars actually become available.
Yeah.
And so far, Council's committed all those dollars coming available to about 2019.
So the point in...
So there is no money in the CRL right now.
But then
now.
The reprioritization has to happen with
and,
the CRL project.
Yeah, and then you've got a list of projects in the CRL that you actually haven't determined whether you're going to fund them or not. So it's not you've got a list that is funded, now you've got some extra money and no competing interests. You've got half a dozen projects you've already identified that you would like to do in the CRL.
I absolutely understand. And I don't want to leave the impression that some of CRL is free money. It's a tax money. So it's coming from a different way, but it's still a tax.
That's true.
Okay, thanks.
Deputy Mayor, if you could take the chair.
Sure.
So just on that, though, if having been the first in to fund the conceptual design, and if I think there's going to be a motion to fund the next phase of design, if we're in for that much, we're already into the project for $6 million, really, almost at that point, it might not be unreasonable for us to be the last check out of the $60 million. You know, if you round up the feds, round up the philanthropy, and round up the province for their 13, 13, and 14, then if we were paying your last year bills, the year it was coming online in 18 or 19 or 20, because you said 2020 as the sort of vision for it, then that would line up potentially with the point in time where there might be positive cash flow in the CRL.
That is true.
Now, you'd have to move some things around in the CRL. No one's suggesting making the CRL any larger, just within the CRL over time there might be some flexibility as other projects change in their scope or
or estimates become more accurate
or as
we actually move forward.
Because there's a lot of placeholders in there for phase two.
Yes.
And the reason I'm asking is not to predetermine that the CRL would be the thing that would pay for the remaining, what would it be, $8 million and change?
$8.25 million.
See, and that's in the realm of like, we could come up with that, because this is actually a quarter, a quarter, a quarter, a quarter. This would even be eligible for the partnership grant at that point. Now, it would be a big chunk out of that. But once that program's fully funded, if it's funded at $5 million a year, it starts to become possible to see allocating out of that over a couple of years to fund something like this.
Certainly.
So I guess the point is that if we were to use current dollars to do the design today as a very strong commitment of towards the project, we have places we can go in the 2018-2019 time frame to find the balance if all of the other pieces fall into place.
Yeah. So, trying to put this in, maybe simple is not the right terminology, but It's a $60 million project. There's a 25% request to the city. There's a design element that comes in into that. At the end of the day, as long as you're comfortable in funding the 25% on the basis that others are paying the 75, there are different strategies to achieve that funding formula. CRL, you have pay to go, you have debt, you have a whole range of
the other choices one, though, around that. The other one, though, is, I mean, we could park $8.75 million of pay-as-you-go today, but then we don't have $8.25 million.
We would not recommend that, no.
Yeah, no, and that's why I think as long as it is understood that us putting in the 3.75 pretty much means we're going to have to find the other 8.25 when the time comes, but that for us to tie up money today, you know, like I said, there's three different places we can go at the time: pay as you go, CRL, or partnership grant.
Yeah, if you make the decision to do this, where your investment is moving the project forward, there is no guarantee on the success of the project. You're providing the details under which three other entities can make decisions about whether they want to do the project or not.
Well, and
at that point, they'll come back and say,
We might want to put a subject two on this, that before we actually release the whole money and you do $4 million almost worth of design work, that we secure the commitments from the other two orders of government and have a good understanding of the fundraising plan and then move ahead with the design work. Understanding that other parties' dollars may flow over time, ours would then be released immediately at that time to do that work. So I don't think we'd want you to do the design speculatively. I think we'd want to understand that our money has begun to lure ratcheting up commitments from other parties. Does that seem reasonable?
Yes, it does.
Okay. And you've met with other orders of government on this?
Yes, we have. We have met with the province, and we've had meetings with the federal government.
And not to prejudice those, but you've had good reception?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Well,
Mayor Iverson, it is 9.25. I thought it was 12 million. It's 13. It's 13 million.
I was missing the thing. So 9.25 is what we would have to come up with in a few years out, all said and done. So if we were to do the 3.75. Okay, well, that motion may come. I have a suspicion that motion may come when I take back the chair.
Yes.
I will take the chair. And, before I do, I'll move another round of questions. So.
Second.
Okay, we have moved another round of questions. Please vote. Display the vote. Carried.
Now I'll take back the chair, and I'll go to Councillor McKean. Councillor Caterina first? Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Let's just clarify what the mayor said now, because I understood it a different way. Councillor McKean understood it a different way. The 3.75, the design work, you're looking to spend that regardless, or you're going to be holding that and spending it when you have a little stronger commitment from the other three partners here? Just clarify that, if we're spending it regardless, or we're going to wait.
No, your first point is correct, sir.
Okay.
We'll hold it until we have indications from other funders.
Okay, that's a good clarification on there, because I understood it a different way. Ms. Rosen, the CRL.
Yes.
That looks like a reasonable funding source.
It does.
What's the risk that the province is going to say that if you use the CRL, that's their commitment?
So that's not something that they would typically do, Councillor Kettering?
I'm asking if that is...
So in the realm of my knowledge...
Considered.
So that's not something that they would typically do?
And I guess... The follow-up to that is, that would that give them an out?
But you know, Councillor Caterina, we can certainly investigate that.
Okay.
As the mayor had indicated, the CRL is only one of the potential funding sources for the further $9.25 million. So.
Well, that's the flag I want to, or the question I want to ask now, because it sounds reasonable. But in the event that down the road they say, well, we're contributing through the CRL process, their portion of something.
So further to the city manager's comments, I think that the decision that you're faced with today is this a priority project for city council, and is $13 million a reasonable commitment for you to make? And out of this budget, is 3.75 million a reasonable commitment, understanding that if you make that commitment, the other orders of government and the fundraising comes through, that you're basically pre-committing $9.25 million of future capital funding, no matter where that source of funding comes from. And I think that that was the point that the city manager was making.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilor King.
Thank you very much. I will move that the capital profile Windspear expansion, number 15-21-3300, increased by $3.75 million to fund expansion design from pay-as-you-go, and that is seconded by Don Iveson.
See, that's how I knew it was coming. Okay. Well, to fund the profile. Fund phase one of the profile, basically.
Yeah, because it's unfunded at this point in time. Yeah. You just want to fund it to $3.75 million.
Yeah. We can deal with that. The question of the, I mean, I think it would be released in dribs and drabs along.
So we would actually work with community services on putting together a funding agreement that actually talks about the disposition of the funds based on the conversation that has been had here today.
Yeah, I think that's best negotiated and then probably brought back separately. So,
well, maybe we could provide council with a bit of a briefing around that in advance of you voting on the motion.
Or you could give us a motion to pass at that time if it passes that says, okay, to administer this.
We could do that as well.
That's the typical, you know, do the funding agreement, bring that back. Yeah, something like that. Okay.
We can do that.
Okay. Well, if you write that up, then we can sort of like Councillor Anderson's.
Just on a point of order,
Councillor Nichol?
Yeah, I thought the motions had to be very clear, identifying a clear funding source.
Pay-as-you-go is the...
That's what I... Okay, so yeah. It's pay-as-you-go,
yeah.
And it's that amount. Okay, I just misheard it.
Yeah, wrong, yeah. The
because
the
way you were talking, it said bring back an agreement, that blah, blah.
No, sorry, there'll be a subsequent... If it passes, there'll be a subsequent that...
That's
much,
where I
much
got...
Much like Councillor Anderson, subsequent
that says
go away and work out the details that will describe how the funds would be released to the third party, then so we'll need a motion similar to that when this one comes up, should it pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, we haven't voted on it yet, don't thank us yet, but we appreciate your work on this and the and your time here today. Thanks for being available to present and answer questions. Who's next?
Fort Edmonton.
Fort Edmonton Management Company. Ready to go?
Here we go.
Okay, go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and members of City Council. Thank you for the opportunity to present today. My name is Bill Demchak, and I'm the Executive Director of the Fort Edmonton Management Company. Mr. Doug Goss, our Board Chair, extends his regrets as he is out of town on business and unable to attend today. So just a little bit of background before we begin. The Fort Edmonton Management Company was incorporated in 2009 as a Part 9 company. The sole shareholder is the City of Edmonton, and the board is appointed by City Council. The city retains ownership of all of the land and assets and the responsibility for all utility upgrades and repairs. The company is responsible for strategic management and operations and the development of all capital projects. In our expansion plans, in 2009, the Fort Edmonton Management Company contracted an international consulting firm to assist in the review and development of a revised master plan. This plan was approved by City Council in 2010. The plan was built on the following objectives: historical and cultural integrity, engaging interpretation, programming, and design, increased visitation and cost recovery, and dynamic brand identity as Edmonton's must-see attraction. In our expansion program, the following capital projects and associated programming opportunities represent the next series of priorities set out in the Fort Edmonton Park Master Plan. The expansion program includes the Indigenous Peoples Experience, 1920s Midway Expansion, Hotel Selkirk Expansion, Front Entry Guest Services and Admissions Area, and various historian projects. First up, the Indigenous Peoples Experience. The theme statement for the Indigenous Peoples Experience is the spirit of Pohonan. It creates the opportunity for the Aboriginal people of Edmonton and area to share their story in a fun, educational, and engaging way through shows and storytelling and hands-on opportunities. We've begun the research and support for the project through an agreement with Treaty 6, and this slide next is a bird's-eye view of the conceptual Indigenous Peoples Experience at Fort Edmonton. So that's at the far end of the park by the old fort. You can see the train in the top right-hand corner. Another component of the Indigenous Peoples Experience is the Spirit of Pohonan Cultural Center, and it supports the telling of Aboriginal stories from those groups that resided or traveled through the Edmonton area. The Cultural Center will facilitate the telling of stories in a fun and engaging way, consistent with our master plan objectives that I identified earlier. It's just a conceptual drawing of that, of the Cultural Center. And another opportunity. Another component is the Peace and Friendship Lodge. And the Peace and Friendship Lodge, where discussions and sharing of the first treaties can occur. And City of Edmonton has currently funded a component to do some research on the Treaty 6 adhesion. That's the first story that we'll be telling. And this is a conceptual of the Peace and Friendship Lodge. The other component as we build out Fort Edmonton Park is a new front entryway. The front entry guest services and admissions area provides for the opportunity to become more efficient and welcoming by creating a new entry with associated guest services, admissions, and gift shop area adjacent to the current front entry. This will allow the train station, which is the current entry, to take on its original role representing the importance of railways in Edmonton's history. This is a little conceptual of that front entryway. Our 1920s Midway expansion will include rides, entertainment, and food from the era. New attractions include a slideshow alley, mirror maze, fun house, a review theater with a cookhouse, seating for 300 people for dinner, a tethered balloon ride, and an events field for recreations of period sporting events or period-specific displays or games. And this is an overview of the Midway expansion. Again, still in the conceptual phase. The hotel expansion will add in a facade between the existing Hotel Selkirk and Capitol Theater, representing the historic Windsor Block and Albion Block. The expansion will add 22 guest rooms, allowing for a larger group stay. The facilities will also have a ballroom that will accommodate up to 250 guests. And this is a conceptual of that, of the hotel expansion. You can see the Albion Block and Windsor Block between the Selkirk and the Capitol. There's also various other historian projects, and these projects provide a number of programming opportunities that will continue the Fort Edmonton experience, with visitors encountering fascinating historical attractions and activities based on real people and real stories. Projects include the recreation of the Singley Laundry and Union Cafe, bringing the Chinese immigration story to life, and an aviation experience bringing the key events and personalities from Edmonton's aviation history to life. As we build out the park, it is intended that Fort Edmonton would remain open as a year-round attraction. This all doesn't happen without taking care of the utilities first. The Fort Edmonton's utilities were assessed in 2010 to determine the remaining lifespan and upgrade requirements for future building development. A master plan for utility replacement identified needs and high-level costing. In 2012, City Council approved funding to replace the lift station and to complete the design for all utility replacement. The capital budget request before you has been submitted for the utility rehab and to support new facility demands. This is submitted at $70 million in rehab and $10 million in growth. So the overall budget for our implementation of our master plan is the $70 million in rehab, which is currently recommended from the administration, $10 million in new utilities growth, which is not recommended at this point, and $98 million expansion program. The funding strategy for this entire project is to be able to leverage the city's contribution for support from other levels of government. And that's my presentation.
Thank you. Councillor Knack?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So this, the funded package, the recommended package is absolutely necessary if we want to do anything. You want to add one more, building, not even a building, if you want to add one more room, you need this to be able to pretty much do anything else from here on out.
That's correct, Councillor Knack.
And the cost of not, and even if we didn't do anything and we didn't add a single other thing, it's about to fail. A lot of this is at the failure state right now. This is done in the 1970s and it's not able to handle, and so that's why one of the costs, the risks, is still 30-some million if we don't do anything.
Well, there still is that risk, and the risk would be at some point in time there would be a rupture.
Excellent. Now, I'd asked the question yesterday's meeting, but maybe it's good to come to you. It's just that I know when I first got involved, which hasn't been a lot yet, but the comment had been made that we were looking at around $56 million, and now we've got something that's about $14 million more. And we also happen to have an unfunded package that they're still hoping to do. So I guess I wanted to get your take. How did we get the original number, and how is it changed? I mean, we talked a little bit about cost escalation, but I would have assumed that when the first cost estimates came out from the management company, that they would have also taken into account the cost escalations too. So can you help me out why there's that difference?
Are you talking specifically about the utility?
Let's talk specifically about the utility.
In my opinion, it was all related to escalation. Originally, the thought was that the work would take place in 2015, 2016. Mm-hmm. Now that's been pushed out to the 2018, 2019, 2020.
So adding 2 years, but adding $14 million of cost. And I guess I'm trying to look for an opportunity to say, hey, you got something that's unfunded here. I'd love to be able to fund that, but we've been adding tons of stuff already, so I'd like to see if there's a possibility of decreasing this one so we can do the other one. And I want to get your comfort on that. And I know there's your comfort, but I want to get your comfort as the management, as the executive director of the management company.
Well, as the management company, we take our lead from the engineering company and from the city that have done the assessment. And if their assessment is that that's the cost, and it is identified with some significant contingency, I believe it's about 30% plus the escalation. So in terms of your question, we would hope that there would be that opportunity to be able to incorporate the other $10 million within the entire project.
And the other question, again, being, so what caused the pushback from 2015 to 2016 to 2018? Why are we looking at that delay now?
I can answer that, if you'd like.
I guess I'll get your answer, and then I'd like to, because I mind. Anyway, yes, let's start there.
Part of it is around the level of disruption that would be caused by the degree of utility relocation that's being identified for the park, and we needed to make sure that we had a solid program in terms of how we would phase this type of work. In order to do that, we need some time to really game plan the right way to do that. Utility relocations and replacements of this size will cause significant impact to real estate in the park, and so we needed some time to really game plan how we were going to do that.
Because this game plan is going to cost us $14 million more, and that's where I'm struggling right now.
Yeah, and
can't we game plan a little bit quicker here?
Actually not.
No.
And part of the reason why it's in this capital budget is because the problem was identified in the last capital budget, and there was no money. There was no ability to fund that in the last capital budget. What you did fund was close to $5 million in absolute immediate flushing and direct problems, and sent us away to go back and flesh out the broader need for the whole park and to submit it in the next cycle, this cycle.
So then help me out, because it sounds like we just did the game plan. If we sent you back at the last time to say, come back with an idea of what this is going to be, it sounds like... I'm struggling, because it sounds like we just said we needed to do another 2 years' worth of game plan, but what were we doing in the last capital cycle?
We were in the last capital cycle, we did the immediate problem.
And we didn't analyze what would need to be done?
And we've been working on what is required in the whole to be able to be ready for this cycle of budget. So when somebody said around $56 million in those in 2013 or 12 dollars, that was a lot of this stuff at that time would have been plus or minus 50%. Mm-hmm. And so that wasn't a firm estimate, and it got revalidated as we did this work and escalated. You can argue with the contingency, and many might, but the nature of the project is such that there is likely to be, we found that out from the little $5 million worth of work, a lot of surprises. This is all truly back of house underground work that may carry with it more surprises than an above ground piece of work. So the contingency is the best estimate. If it's not required, we would return that. We would come back to council with that and maybe make some suggestions for reallocation, but that would be your call.
Councillor Sohi.
So the $10 million for the new utilities growth, that is required in order to facilitate the expansion, right?
Yeah, what we is funded is the rehab amount.
Yeah, of the $70 million rehab, which is basically a necessity. I mean, you can't do without it as council.
But they can't fulfill any of their expansion plans unless somebody pays for that additional. And so the thinking is that if we could get that funded,
yeah,
then it would be all done at once, okay. One time. And not a problem for the future.
But you need to do your basic first. You need to fix all that is identified in the funded package, right?
Yes.
And after that, you do the growth utilities, or you do combine them if you have the resources?
We combine them if we have the resources, but the rules of the game for the budget process was you can't combine rehab and new without articulating to council the difference between the two, because growth had a different priority than rehab. So we're trying to be scrupulously honest here.
I think that's the problem of being a hard line on growth and a renewal, right? So
yeah, but the alternative, like, to be fair, and particularly supportive of our own city corporate decision making on this, otherwise you can combine the two, and we could, back to you and Councillor Knack, we could have said we think the rehab is 56 to 70, and we think the new is 10, and give us 70, and we'll get as far as we can. Right. But that's not the rules of the game.
Okay, the rules are rules. So far, right? So when I'm looking at the cash flow, Ms. Rosen, for the funded profile on 39.
Yes.
29.8 in 2019. And 7.4 in 2020. Majority coming from MSI and some from pay as you go. So the MSI funding, you get that funding on the same year, or you get that in advance?
So we get it as council approves the projects, we actually submit the application to get the funding as they are moving forward.
No, but we get MSI funding allocated to us.
On an annual basis?
On an annual basis, regardless whether we allocate that to projects or
not. Oh, no.
We have to submit.
We have to submit an application. And we get to apply for up to the $174 million that is our
allocation. So the money coming in 2019 will be coming in 2019 from MSI funding, or will be given to us in prior year?
It will be coming to us in 2019.
Oh, I see. So you can't kind of leverage. It's not money in the bank then.
No. And in fact, Councillor Sohi, if I could just remind you, when they dropped our MSI funding, what we actually did was we fast-tracked some.
Yeah.
So we spent money in advance of actually getting it by doing the short-term borrowing. So, no, it comes in the year that the province actually...
Okay. All right. Then that is not an option. I was going to... Anyways, thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Councillor Anderson?
Well, I'm just trying to just to explore a little bit this, what the trade-offs are here. So we know we can go in and do the big piece of the job, which just gets us back to where we should be now in terms of having utilities that will work, correct? But to do that, we also, I think, know that that involves shutting down the park for a period of time to do it. This is a pretty massive piece of work, correct?
Correct.
So... if we can't do the growth piece at the same time, does that mean we will have to do the growth in the future, have to shut it all down again, could that piece be done later as a later piece of work without the same level of disruption? Don't know who wants to answer that.
Councillor Anderson, the intent would be that to do everything at the same time.
Hmm.
If we can't.
But if you can't, then what happens?
If we can't, then I don't think we would have to shut down. We have done massive construction in the park before with the Capitol Theater, Blatchford Field Air Hangar, Hotel Selkirk, at the time that the park was open to the public. There is disruption, but it would not require closure.
With the greatest of respect to Bill, I'd really like Adam to answer that. Mr. Laughlin.
Just to add to Mr. Demchuk, I think the replacement piece is a significant impact to the park. The additional piece is something that I think can be managed a bit more easily in terms of keeping the park open.
Okay. Then what about the costs? Is it way cheaper to do it all together, or will, if we delay the new stuff, will it just be the same amount of money later on? Understanding that there's inflation and other things in there, but is there efficiency in doing it all at once?
There's always efficiency when you have a contractor on site and you're taking advantage of them being on site for other work, just in terms of mobilization and other costs that are associated with construction. There is an efficiency for utility work. It's tough to really zero in on exactly what that efficiency would be, but there is an efficiency.
So it's hard to know how significant that would be.
Right, and subject to surprises vis-a-vis the contingency as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, the good news would be we give you the one piece, you come back to us on the supplementary capital and say we think we have the money to do the whole thing. But would we know that? When would we know that? Would we, you know, could we still ramp up at that point, or would we know that before we actually put a shovel in the ground, or would we know that when the last piece of what we'd already done got covered over?
So part of the flexibility with the cash flow that we do have is it does give us a bit of flexibility to be able to do that.
So we could still give you the one package and have a good news story where you come back to us and say we'd like to expand this profile without actually having to expand the money.
Right, that would be the ideal.
And we could know that before we put a shovel in the ground.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, just to be clear, Councillor Henderson, we would be coming back to you and saying this money is available and these are all of the things that you could do with it.
I get that piece of the puzzle. There is precedent to that, and I know it created because the library did it very soon.
And I would be really sad if Miss Rosen thought we would do anything but that.
Yeah.
and that's exactly what we would do.
I'm just trying to imagine where we're at here. So the other question is whether or not our ability to leverage the other funding, and clearly we need to, you know, this is just the utility piece, right? Obviously, we're going elsewhere for the money to actually get the stuff that the utilities would connect to. So, does that, our ability to leverage that, our ability to raise the other piece of the money that needs to make this happen, does that get impacted by whether we say yay or nay to the growth piece?
Well, our hope is that as part of the Build Canada fund, that the council had a report before you a couple of weeks ago where we're trying to leverage that money with the Build Canada fund, which will be before you again in January, to determine where that funding could go. So there could free up $22 million at that point that would assist us in doing the above ground development to leverage again further with the provincial government.
And typically, you need to hear this, because typically we leverage the Build Canada fund ourselves in-house for our own projects. So that's the same gig that's been described. They're asking for the ability to use our money as the leverage money for the Build Canada Fund, which is, but Ms. Rosen seems to understand that and be okay with it.
Yeah, but, well, the question is, what money are we leveraging? Are we leveraging the renewal money? Is that leverageable, or do you need the growth money to leverage? That's the question I'm asking.
You mean to leverage Building Canada Fund?
Yeah.
So I don't believe that Building Canada really cares whether we classify it as renewal or growth.
So the funded package could be used to leverage if we chose to do that, understanding that we may want to do other stuff with that money.
Right.
Yeah.
Understanding they're asking for the ability to have the Building Canada Fund leverage opportunity designated towards their project.
Which council, well, no, that was on the list of things that council said was eligible when we discussed Building Canada recently, so council's already given some direction on that.
Fair enough.
Yeah, for the national program. For the Building Canada national program,
this one was provincial territorial.
Okay, PTI.
Yeah, no, it was the Yellowhead that was national, I think, going after, and national for LRT and interchanges. And this one was the...
And then it becomes up to the province in terms of how much money is actually allocated in the Edmonton area.
Yeah. I'm clarifying. Oh, well, do you have one more question, Councillor Henderson?
First time. Sorry.
Well, I was just interjecting with council's previous direction on that matter. Councillor Loken, do you have a motion or do you have questions?
I have questions.
Did you ask around already?
No.
Okay. Oh, right. Okay. Go ahead.
So, given the discussion, and I thought I knew this fairly well, but I just want to double check. So, the funded package of $70 million is what we need now.
Yes.
Okay.
For the current infrastructure.
Current infrastructure. So the 10, which is unfunded for the future attractions, utilities, I don't need to put that on the table as a motion during this.
Well, that's up to you. Okay. But you subscribe to Councillor Henderson's thinking, because of the 30% contingency, because this is underground work, Mr. Loughlin explained that once we got into it, we'd be able to tell you better whether or not we can do some of that, need the full contingency or not. We'll give you an update as soon as we possibly can. And if, in fact, more money is needed, that perhaps through supplementary you can make a decision then. That's what Councillor Henderson said. It's anybody's of your purview to either recommend that growth piece now or not.
Maybe I could just phrase it a different way, Councillor Loken. This is a project that is actually covering a considerable length of time, a 5-year period of time. You have time.
Well, that's what I'm trying to determine. I mean, this would have to come out of pay as you go, and that's loading up.
Yes.
So that's what I'm trying to determine, whether it's better to put it out now. I mean, it's still subject to debate whether it gets passed or not, but if it can, if we can do it in a supplementary cycle,
certainly
then maybe that's the best way to go at this point. So as long as that's going to suit the needs of the fort. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I think Councillor Asiger, if you could take the chair. So in a way, sort of like the Windspear maneuver, you put some money on the table, you bring some other partners to the table, and the more partners you can bring to the table, the further the dollars go that we put on the table. And so far, we've put 70 plus million bucks on the table.
Yes,
a good chunk of which is renewal, but it's renewal for the purpose of accommodating the expansion.
That is a big commitment.
Yeah, it's a huge commitment.
Yeah, and so it should be leverageable.
But it also comes out of RIMS.
It does.
This is one of your emergent renewal needs. You know,
this is one of our assets, and
look after it.
And we either want to do this work, or we want to not have Fort Edmonton Park in the future.
Yeah. So you got to keep it running. This is part of that $460 million a year worth of fixing up all the $42 billion worth of stuff we have, and the park's part of that. But in this case, we do have the opportunity to leverage that against some neat growth opportunities and some partner dough to do some of these other things over time. And if those can happen at the same time as construction, that's ideal. If they can't, they can come in later. I got that right? To sum up? Yeah. Okay. So it's not like we're not putting some serious dough into the park.
No, we're putting very serious though into the park.
Yeah, which, you know, it's a fantastic thing that we do, and to Bill and on my behalf anyway, to Doug and your team, you guys have really done great things at the park. It continues to be, you know, they've got in the midway, they've got the hammer, and you can hit the thing. It goes up and it dings the thing in the old-timey midway. Yeah, I got that this summer. It was good. Yeah. So test your strength. Yeah, feats of strength. Yeah.
Sorry, Mr. Mayor, they rigged it so you would get that.
See, and that is good government relations right there. That is nicely done. So the Windspear folks are listening.
You did it with one hand, you understand.
Yeah. Yeah. No. All right. I will take back the chair. Thank the folks from Fort Edmonton Management Company. You can step back now. And next up is TELUS World of Science. Now, at the rate that we're going here, we may get through TELUS World of Science before the break, and then we will get into questions of transportation. And I doubt we'll finish transportation today, but we just might. And so I would say definitely be debating motions on Monday. So you'll have the opportunity until Monday to continue to submit motions. But if you can prepare any motions you have today, then administration, the more they have, the more they can compile into the working sheets for our consideration on Monday. So
just clarification, you're doing on motion then after.
Yeah. So and then we'll vote through once we have stacked up all the amendments. Administration may have some supplemental information for us. Actually, Lorna, I was going to move that motion we talked about, the smoothing motion,
okay,
at some point. And actually, before the TELUS World of Science guys get too cozy, Councillor McKean had a subsequent on the Windspear. Have you got that? Have the clerks got that ready? Just about ready? Well, why don't we come back to it after the TELUS World of Science piece then, if you can get that ready for after TELUS World of Science, and then Ms. Rosen, maybe we can get that other motion ready as well?
Sure.
Okay. So next up we'll go to TELUS World of Science. You got a presentation?
We have a verbal presentation. We are going to just have a conversation with you. Your friends from Coronation Park are here. We have good news and bad news. The good news is we are the last of the civic agencies presenting. The bad news is we want some money. But we're going to keep our conversation brief. We're not going to worry about slides. You have a document from us that has three parts. It has a modified proposal from our original Phase 2 proposal. The second section is a sheaf of support letters for the project. And the third section contains some graphs, some charts of performance indicators for TELUS World of Science Edmonton, and also some of the renderings of our initial architecture. So we might reference that document as we go along, but we'll keep it short here. But to get started, I'll introduce the chair of our board.
The TELUS World of Science is a place of light and inspiration that every member of our community benefits from. Hello, Council. I am Jackson Vonder O'Heath, Chief Executive Officer of Gateway Mechanical. It's a company with operations throughout Western Canada, but it's headquartered right here in Edmonton. Today, I'm speaking to you as Chair of the TELUS World of Science, a city-owned facility operated by the Edmonton Space and Science Foundation. Our center is successful because we satisfy a deep need in our population to connect with science in an approachable way. Walk through our doors on any given day, and you will see school children, teachers, young couples, parents, and seniors interacting with science in ways they cannot anywhere else. It's a precious resource to our city that needs maintenance and investment capital to stay current and in tune with a growing city. TELUS World of Science is woven into the fabric of this community. Since 1984, it has hosted millions of visitors to our programs and exhibits. The IMAX Theater and the Margaret Ziedler Star Theater are aged planetarium. In addition, we have hosted hundreds of different events from science fairs to international conferences. Did you know that we are Alberta's second largest ticketed attraction after the Calgary Zoo? In 2014, we had total attendance of 619,000. Our employees and volunteers work hard and are very proud of this result. Clearly, the TELUS World of Science is an important and distinguishing feature of our community that our population responds to by using it. A huge part of its success is due to the ongoing partnership between our foundation that operates the Science Center and the City of Edmonton, who own the building. Our history has always been distinguished by the two parties working together collaboratively. Together, we have an excellent track record of turning city investment, whether on the capital or the operating side, into powerful economic and cultural impact. In 2009, under the direction from the City of Edmonton, TELUS World of Science developed a master plan that was approved by the City. At the City's request, this plan for growth and rejuvenation was split into three phases. Our current capital request is to invest in phase two of the three-phase master plan. The original capital request submitted in the summer of 2014 to the City of Edmonton sought $47 million over 4 years, 2015 to 2018. This was to be the City's contribution to a projected $182 million cost for Phase 2. However, based on dialogue with and feedback from the City, we came to understand that this amount was not possible in the current capital environment the City is operating within. So in response to this reality, we have reduced the scope of this phase of the project and found ways to bring some of the Foundation's own resources to the table. We request seed investment of $12 million for the capital period of 2015 to 2018 as the City's contribution towards a total capital investment of $40 million. This is 25% of the original request. The remaining funds will come through a private sector campaign, our own strategic reserve fund, and contributions from the province of Alberta and the Government of Canada. We asked ourselves, how can we generate the maximum impact and maximum return on investment within a more realistic capital participation framework from the City? In answer to this question, we scaled back significantly but found creative ways to keep the minimum key elements of the plan that will drive the transformational change we need to stay relevant and keep pace with our growing and increasingly dynamic city. Specifically, we have found economic efficiencies by redesigning pre-existing space in order to keep the new construction footprint to a manageable minimum. We have focused on the project investments that will provide the biggest revenue, cultural, and economic impacts. We recognize that we can't do all of the contemplated phase two at once, but we acknowledge that we must get started with a manageable and essential first step. However, even at this minimum level, this is not incremental change. This is a bold, unique vision of what our Science Center can be with a renewed emphasis on up-to-date science. It will resonate with the community, reflect our values as leaders in science education, science responsibility, and science-based prosperity. Our precious Science Center is unique and a valuable feature of our community. It needs continued investment to stay relevant in a constantly changing environment and keep pace with a constantly growing and evolving city. With your continued support, in our long shared vision, we will avoid the perils of non-investment and continue on our path towards shared success. Alan Nursel, Chief Executive Officer, will now share some details.
Thank you, Jackson. It's really good to be here as a representative of an outstanding board and staff team. In 2012 and 2013, the city helped fund phase one of this project. TELUS World of Science Edmonton doubled the city's investment, and the result was Special Exhibition Hall and an IMAX theater, and the results have been amazing. In just two of the exhibitions that have been shown in the Exhibition Hall, we have generated 320,000 individual admissions. That translates, based on a study done by Economic Planning Group, translates into about $30 million of additional visitor spending in just the 10 months associated with two exhibitions. That's return on investment. That is not only doubling the money from the city, but also generating real economic return inside the city. We leverage your dollars. We make them work for the economic and educational good of the community. We are a positive force for the quality of life in Edmonton. But that was phase one. The continued success of the Science Center is in jeopardy if we do not move on phase two, because we still need to address the core Science Center. This is not a surprise. This has always been part of the plan. We don't have a viable facility if we're just a special exhibition hall and IMAX theater. The success of the investment to date from the city, from the province, from the feds, from the private sector is in jeopardy if we don't revitalize the core Science Center. call our modified version of Phase 2 the original grand vision. We call our new vision the Aurora Initiative. We like that name because it reminds us of the importance of the North and the dark winter skies here in Edmonton that have been such an important part of the astronomy and planetarium shows that have been a part of Edmonton since 1960. And it also gives a sense of igniting fires of passion around science. The carefully selected four elements in our renewal that we're looking at. The first is we call the North Star Dome. Just like we revitalized the IMAX theater, completely redid it so that it was, whereas it was state-of-the-art in 84, it's now state-of-the-art again. We need to do the same thing with the Margaret Ziegler Star Theater, the planetarium inside the Douglas Cardinal Building. We can rebuild that to meet 21st century audience expectations and needs, and we have the opportunity to create unique experiences with our partners like the University of Alberta and other scientific establishments. We can build the capability to take kids, teens, adults, seniors out to the edge of the universe and down into the heart of the atom to create a truly memorable and unique educational facility. The second element we call the Portal to the Arctic. It's again a unique initiative. It's about focusing on the new galleries that focus on the science of the Canadian Arctic that is in keeping with this city's scientific and engineering expertise and aligning with our economic strength. The science of the Arctic will only grow in importance, and this science is relevant, topical, and essential. The third element, rejuvenating some of our existing science galleries. In the original plan, these galleries were going to be knocked down and replaced with new architecture. We've looked at how we can move, we can work around them. It is much more cost efficient if we take those galleries, renovate them, perhaps even mezzanine them to increase the available floor space, so we can find inexpensive ways to increase the available space for exhibits, programs, and activities. The final element, the fourth element, is the rejuvenation of the Cardinal Building itself. The Cardinal Building is the striking original architecture of the facility. Our most popular space is Discovery Land, the Early Childhood Education Center. In that space, it's tucked away in a corner of the Cardinal Building. Again, without new construction, we can renovate the main exhibition spaces of the Cardinal Building, give that much higher profile, give that much more space to meet a very specific demand that we know exists. Why do we think Council should make this investment? We have a bunch of reasons. First, it meets demonstrated demand, but the demand will not last. As Jackson mentioned, we had an attendance of over 600,000 in 2013. We can draw an audience, but we can't continue to draw the audience if we are just a special exhibition hall and an IMAX theater around a tired Science Center core. Without moving forward on Phase 2, we lose the impact of the existing investment, and attendance will be in jeopardy. This project is largely ready to go. We have done a considerable amount of design work. We have a business plan. We have worked with architects to get design to an advanced level. We anticipate that we can get construction started in 2015 inside the Cardinal Building. We can start moving. It improves our financial sustainability, and by extension, it reduces risk to the City of Edmonton. The project improves our long-term sustainability and reduces the variability of our revenue. It flattens out our revenue stream so that we don't have sort of spikes and valleys between special exhibitions. The Strong Core Science Center attracts an audience every day, and it allows us to keep our need for support from the city to a manageable level. Right now, the city support is 15%, just 15% of our annual operating budget. We turn that 15% into a lot of economic activity. If we keep the Science Center healthy, that percentage does not need to increase. We are investing along with the city. Not huge numbers, but we have, through prudent financial management, we have built an operating reserve that protects us and protects the city from variability in our finances, and also allows us to we've been able to find some money. We can commit $500,000 in 2015 from our own reserves to help move this project forward and to show our commitment. The project has community support. We have extensive letters from community organizations and companies. It's worth pointing out that we have the Community League of Woodcroft. We have their support. They were in a couple of weeks ago again with me. This project has widespread community engagement and widespread support. It's a unique attraction. The elements of this initiative distinguish the Science Center from any other Canadian Science Center. The emphasis on Arctic science and the pursuit of new techniques and digital visualization are the sort of things that create a unique experience and make the Science Center far more reflective of science here in Edmonton. And it supports the planned enhancements for Coronation Park. We have met with the Coronation Park design team. Their insights have informed our plans and designs, and the growing Science Center will be an integral part of the entire Coronation Park experience. So, we believe we're an exemplary illustration of how this city is moving forward. We are reimagining and strengthening one of the city's most important cultural institutions. We're thinking not about 2015, but we're thinking about 2025, when the city is well over 1 million people, and there's another 500,000 people in the outside, in the surrounding communities. The Science Center's growth is about meeting the needs of the expanding city. The City of Edmonton has always been there for us. They've been a great partner. We respect and understand the incredible constraints on capital at this time, which is why we refocused our efforts, brought some of our resources to the table to try to get the maximum impact for what we hope is a manageable investment. So we're creating a unique experience for Edmontonians that supports educational needs in the community, creates a community space for creativity and innovation, and provides economic impact for Edmonton. And it aligns with the strategic directions articulated by this council. Thank you very much for your time, and we're happy to answer questions.
There are a few questions for you, starting with Councillor Walters.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation and for the efforts you make every day at the TELUS World of Science. So this was phase two when you came to us before. It was originally 187.
182.
Oh, sorry, 182.
Yeah, we asked 47.
We asked for 47.
Yeah.
Or you asked for 47. So the other funders were as nervous as we were, I assume?
Yes. It was too ambitious for the dollars that are available. After we talked to the province and the feds, and in the absence of a strong commitment from the city,
right?
It's too rich. So we still see that whether or not we have to spend $182 million to do all of the phase two as we envisioned it, we still see more than what we've just done, or more than what we're suggesting here.
So phase two, and then is there now?
Well, we call this phase two A. There already was a phase three. We call this phase two A.
So,
but this allows us to get traction, and to figure out how to do things right, and.
So we can expect phase two B next capital budget.
Yes.
Okay. So I see, and how does it? The phase 2A now changed the cash flow, if at all, in terms of what was in the profile that we have.
We've asked.
So we've just divided the same sort of proportionally?
Well, no, we've asked for a little more upfront. We've asked for $5 million in the first year, $3 million, $3 million, and $1 million. That's what's in our modified proposal.
In 15?
Yes.
Or 16?
$5 million in 15.
In 15, because before nothing was in 15. It was all started in 16.
The beauty of what we have now is we think we can move quickly and we can start to make a difference.
So I see a very enthusiastic letter in your package from one of our regional neighbors that didn't come with a check paperclip to it, did it? That you just forgot to include the photocopy of?
No, the letter was not addressed to me, actually. To my predecessor.
Well, it's interesting because we talked about it in the presentation, the idea of regional facilities and the concept of regional facilities, and that may be something we need to think about in terms of phase 2B and in terms of this and others, is what is definitively a regional facility, not a City of Edmonton facility funded by City of Edmonton but used regionally. So anyways, a thought for another day. Thank you for the presentation.
You're welcome.
Councillor Essinger.
Thank you very much. Though it's interesting, it's creating a portal to the Arctic, and days like today we don't really need that.
So it already exists.
But if I understand this correctly, if we fund the $12 million ask, is this contingent then on getting the matching grants from the other levels of government for you to move on? Or is it just something that you could leverage those other groups?
Well, I think it's a little of both. I mean, we need the initial investment so that we can go after matching program funds through the province, and so that we can make requests of meaning to the federal government. And we have a very good track record with the corporate sector. We are ready to go quickly on a capital campaign that will start to ask for money out of the capital sector, or the private sector rather, and we hope that we trust that will help leverage money from other levels of government. But the package as we envision it is a $40 million package that is going to require support from other levels of government and from the private sector, much the same as the Wind Spirit.
Just to add, Councillor Esslinger, your points are well taken in terms of a funding agreement that we would bring back to Council. If it was your direction to make the release of the funds subject to the garnering of the balance of the funds, we'd take that direction. Probably whatever it applies to one group should apply to the other, but
that's where I was going.
Yeah.
I mean, I think your audience that you've attracted, and then we have the age of the facility. I'm interested in this hugely popular Discovery Land, and you talk about building it to a full-scale early childhood learning center because of demand. What kind of demand are you looking at?
Well, Discovery Land as it exists right now is about 1,000 square feet in the Cardinal Building, and we have such demand from both schools and homeschools and the general public that we have to close the doors at certain times because it's unsafe inside there. We have capacity limits. In the original plan, because of its success, we had originally looked at taking it up to about a 10,000 square foot space. Within the Cardinal Building, we can get it to about 6,000 square feet and create a space that's specifically aimed for young families, especially with kids, especially families with preschool children, that provides lessons not only for the kids, a fun experience for the kids, but also helps the adults understand how kids learn.
Okay, and
Can I follow up on that just quickly?
Yes.
We think that there is at least 300% of the demand that we can provide now. 2A goes to 100% increase in floor capacity, but even at that level, it won't meet demand.
Okay. Now, of the 619,000 people you saw last year, do you have any sense if they're all Edmontonians, or do you have a sense of the regional participation?
It's roughly 50% Edmontonians, 45% the rest of Alberta, and 5% outside of Alberta. That's our over the course of a year, that's our rough breakdown.
Okay, and you're looking for funding. You got letter support from City of Leduc, I think it was. Are you looking for funding from other areas as well?
We have not initiated those conversations, but I would not be at all bashful about having those discussions.
Okay, I'd like to make a motion, but I can do it after second round. Is that your mind?
It's your call. We can go to...
Well, I can do it now. And
okay. Yep. No, you can. Go ahead.
So I would like to move and seconded by Michael Walters to increase the capital profile of TELUS World of Science 15-21-6600 by $12 million to fund Phase 2A and use pay-as-you-go money.
Okay, and so that's out there, and then we'd probably put one of those subsequents on it when we get to it around the funding agreement as... So we may want to get some boilerplate for that ready. Councillor Oshry.
Thank you. So can we just go through the numbers one more time? You're looking for $40 million total?
Yes.
$12 million from us.
Yes.
How much from fundraising? How much from the other levels of government?
$10 million from the province, $10 million from the government of Canada, and an $8 million capital campaign.
And how's that capital campaign looking?
Well, the capital campaign is in its early stages. It has not.
Okay. And the conversations with the other levels of government have gone.
They've been casual, but they are aware of this initiative, and all I can say is we have a great track record in the past couple of years. The city has led the way, and the other levels of government have come in behind quite successfully, and the private sector has come in behind. Every dollar that was contributed to the first phase of this project was doubled. And they were doubled in a fairly short time frame. We're looking at taking 2 to 2.5 years to put all the matching dollars together. Okay. I mean, it's not going to happen overnight.
And what in the construction? So some of it is bigger rooms to do more programming, more things that you guys do. So is there anything else? I don't mean that flippantly, but is there anything else that's in? Can you just explain anything else that's going to be new with this? Mm-hmm. Is there anything else? Why don't you just explain to me the?
Okay.
There's pretty colored thing that shows what you guys are doing.
Okay.
Just give us a really
brand new planetarium. The whole planetarium experience is transformed.
Okay.
We replace most of the tired old exhibitry in the Cardinal Building with the Early Childhood Education Center and some other ancillary things, but mostly it's the Early Childhood Education Center. Okay. We have the new Arctic Galleries. That is, again, one of the pretty colors on there. There's also some the new Arctic Galleries are a new construction that gives us a new facade that improves our amenities, our cafeteria, our gift shop, things that are important revenue streams. And the last thing is we have two existing large galleries named after in honor of the Hull family and the Allard family. Those galleries, if we got them, we can get about 8,000 to 9,000 square feet of new exhibit space. If we mezzanine them, we can add another 50% on top of that, and that's far less expensive types of galleries than we came to you first in the original proposal.
And if this doesn't get funded, it's basically business as usual for 4 more years, and then
It's going to be tough.
Business in decline. So
it is. Yeah. It's.
Oh, hey, Jackson.
Sorry,
Mr. Ohi. Sorry, Vander Ohi. Say it again.
I said it wouldn't be business as usual. We think it's business in decline. We need to put the science back in the science center, and it's really from the core. Like most of you would have experienced the Queen Elizabeth Planetarium as kids. You know, our planetarium at the very core of our facility is crumbling. It's literally wasting away, and we don't have the digital support we need to do the programming we want. We were very excited about hosting the 2016 International Conference for Planetariums, which we lost because they felt our planetarium wasn't up to snuff, wasn't acceptable for the venue. So that's part of it. You asked what it's going to be like. When you approach the building, similar to this building where you've got the city room, which is a place for you all to interact with the public, you know, our entrance as you walk in is going to be a better and more appropriate way to interact with the public in a non-ticketed way. Okay, we want people to be able to approach the facility and not necessarily have to, you know, they can come into the facility, they can approach the public space, they can go to the gift shop, they can go to the food service in a way that is more inviting, a way for us to interact with people in a non-exhibit, non-attraction sort of way, like you all do in the sitting room today. Just as I was walking up the stairs, I saw the police cadets practicing. That's the sort of thing that can start to happen for us in this new facility. So it's getting the science back in the facility. It's dealing with crumbling architecture and stuff that was built in 1984 and hasn't been updated since 2001. So we really need to do it.
All right, thank you. Ms. Cochran, so why, this is unfunded, can you explain why? I mean, besides the fact that we have a limited amount of money and you got to make some decisions, but how did you prioritize, or whoever made these decisions?
Well, I think as has been presented to you, the capital priorities team is made up of senior representatives of each of the branches that have capital requirements in their department, and they reviewed all the asks predominantly from a focus and an emphasis on rehab of existing this year compared to growth, and a catch-up from that standpoint. So there was a number of arm's length projects, both big and little, that you're hearing from today, that when the corporate leadership team reviewed the efficiencies and effectiveness, put aside some money for you to consider these various options. This was a much bigger option. In fact, I think it's printed in the budget binders quite differently. Ms. Rosen and I particularly met with TELUS World of Science and said that their initial ask, we didn't think could be dealt with by council given the current reality. So this is a just received amendment that tries to address that point, and that's why in those factors combined all lead to where it is right now today.
Okay, thank you. Out of time.
Thank you. Councillor Gibbons?
Just a quick question on the fact that you said 45% of the attendees come from Alberta. Have you broken down by areas or anything?
We could break that down, but I don't have that off the top of my head.
It'd be nice to know what it is by the region, because they're the accessible ones. We're the hub, and the spoke comes in from all over. So yeah. I'd like to know that. Thanks.
We can find that out.
This is one of those things we do for Northern Alberta that we do not get paid for. This is a great example. Choppers are an example. This is an example. All kinds of things we do. If we're going to do the white mud, that's an example. It's just frustrating. 45% of the bodies are from elsewhere in the province. So that's why we canceled that morning meeting 2 weeks from now, so I can go to the ledge and
can I make just one example. Just one. Councillor Osri has asked around prioritization. It is obviously easier to prioritize something when you're paying 25% when the other 75% is available. But pretty much all the projects come in, we're always first on the list.
Yeah. And I guess that's the offset. I mean, in a case like this, if we're able to get provincial and federal dough, that's part of the offset for the regional and national piece. So I should have passed the chair to Councillor Essinger. I'll ask the same question you guys that I asked the Windspear guys. You've had conversations with the other orders of government?
Yes, we have, and they're both aware of it, but there's been no formal proposal gone forward.
Okay. If I may just add, sorry, Steve Baker, Chief Operating Officer with TELUS World of Science. So just to add to the question, I think it's really important to note what Alan had referenced earlier too. This journey all the way along, the federal government and the provincial government have been partnered in one way or another. We can go back right to our Vision Beyond 2000 campaign when we became Odysseum in 2001. The province stepped up significantly for that one. When we went into the campaign, it was May in 2011 when City Council committed $3.5 million towards the expansion gallery. Then we were able to help us leverage that funding that then came $3 million from the province and then others for the rest of it. And then the federal government. So they've been part of phase one, so they're part of the big journey already. So they are very much aware of the plan, of the reference towards it. We just have not gone to this stage just yet, you know, as Alan has referenced. But I think it's really important to note that we have made it very clear to them the aspect of what an impact we're making on the entire province, too.
I think I asked this about seven, eight years ago when I first got elected. I'm not sure if any of you were there at the time, but any opportunity to charge a differential rate. So if you're an Edmontonian, card-carrying, tax-paying Edmontonian, it's $5 to get in, and if you're not, it's $6. Just to help offset on a bit of a user pay, because if a neighboring municipality wants to chip in on the capital, they get the Edmonton rate. Have you ever looked at that?
We have not looked at that. It's an interesting possibility. I couldn't give you a feasibility analysis on the spot of that, but we'll consider it. It is worth mentioning that the money that we're bringing to the table, we do slice off a tiny amount of each ticket price to go into our strategic reserve.
Which allows you to fund some capital.
Which allows
so there is
to
a little
capital.
Bit of a user pay, whatever the rate is.
That's right.
That 45% of people from elsewhere are chipping in a little bit on facility.
That's right.
And obviously the overhead of doing the work to get it done.
And
the program.
Exactly. And the other element that's important to remember about the 45% is they're going to restaurants, they're staying in hotels, they're using the other facilities. We have a big tourism mandate. We work closely with the city, and we want to be a real draw.
I know Jackson's done some work on the region. He helped do the Capitalize report, which has been collecting dust for a couple of years.
Some of those ideas are coming forward.
Yeah.
But, in terms of regional footprint, there's a couple things is that we think it's very useful for us to reach north. And our mobile programs go right up into northern Alberta. We think that's good for Edmonton, because Edmonton being the service depot and the gateway to the north. The other thing about funding and where it comes from is in 2011, when we did the Discovery Land expansion, the first one, which is still 300% too small, the only government funding we got was from the province, and the rest was from corporate. So they have been there for us, and when the cities come forward on the exhibit hall and on the IMAX, they did come with matching funds, so they've been very, very helpful that way. And that is a big argument we make to them, is that we service all points in Alberta. We actually had, for our major exhibits, we had numerous folks come from outside of the country, outside of the province, mm-hmm. and legions of people come from Calgary to experience our beautiful city, stay in our hotels, spend money, and go to the Harry Potter, Star Wars exhibits. So those were big wins for us.
And in addition to that, if I may add, when we did in 2012 our Environment Gallery renewal as well, the funding from came from the province. That was only government funding. And just in a reference to Discovery Land, to give a note, and the province celebrates this fact, that in January 2011, so the year before we opened up Discovery Land, attendance was 7,800. January 2012, the first month in, 26,000 to that area. So it shows the impact. So when we're referencing it's like 300% still too small, we've got the numbers, and that repeated continually. It is the most used space in our entire building.
Well, that's all useful, actually, because we are getting help from other orders of government to reflect the fact that this is a regional amenity, and there is some direct benefit to our citizens to having it right here in the city, and some direct benefit in terms of a significant tourism driver. So good work. Councillor, you're not a councillor at all. Ms. Cochran, did you have an additional thought? You were fidgeting in an indicative way there a minute ago.
No.
Okay, good. Not good. I mean, whatever, but...
Just validated Mr. Farbrother's attempts to keep me still.
Okay. All right. Well, I will take back the chair, and I'm sure on behalf of all of us, thanks to you, Alan and Jackson and Steve, and to your team, especially your volunteer board of directors, but also your very hardworking staff. I've been keeping baby Alice out of there because I figure she'll destroy the place. But if you're going to renovate it soon anyway, I'll bring her down and she can help with the demo crew. So she's at that age. So I will. I have the chair. And we're just about at the break. We got a couple quick motions we could deal with before we actually take our recess here, and then we'll come back to the Transportation Department. Thanks, fellas. We'll come back to the Transportation Department at 3:45. There is the subsequent on the wind spear. Have you got that ready, Madam Clerk?
Just about, but not
just
quite.
About? Just about 5 seconds, or just about we'll deal with it at 3:45? 3:45? Okay, let's take our break now, and we've got a couple quick motions to deal with. Sorry, Councillor Gibbons?
I like
you. You got to be on the board. Okay.
On the board.
Okay. See? Yeah, you are now.
Okay. I like the move that an increase be added to the profile of EETP stormwater drainage, which is 15/74/4111, to increase up to $13 million. This is an initiative to contribute to the costs associated with the Horse Hill neighborhood number 2 developer oversizing a proposed stormwater outlet trunk in order to service EETP. And this is by Tuesday we'll have the exact figure. It's less than
so that's a placeholder number, and you'll refine the number on Tuesday once we know what it is.
Second.
Okay, that's seconded by Councillor Caterina. And the source of funds was?
Oh, debt.
Debt, okay. Super duper. Did you have a motion, Councillor Caterina, or were you just clicked on to do that? Okay, let's take our break, and then we'll deal with these other cleanups when we come back at 3:45 with the Transportation Department.